Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
That was a good one. So, what's a little bit unusual about today is that we're going to be doing this week's episode in two parts. This is part one, or side A, as I'm lovingly referring to it as, and today is July 27th, 2013. You're listening to the GameBuoy Podcast, episode 33, Through the Fire and Flames, a look at the highs and lows of rhythm gaming, A side. So yeah, due to real-life scheduling issues, we're going to be recording, and obviously uploading, this week's GameBuoy in two parts. You're currently listening to part one, which is cool, and part two, which will be up, well, probably by the time you hear this, because we love all of our listeners out there in internet radio land.
We're making hearts with our hands right now.
We totes are. Totes. Part two is going to be where the actual discussion on rhythm games will take place, and we just may have a very special guest star or two to help us cover it. So please look forward to it. With that, let's get this show on the road and follow up on a few GameBuoy-approved news stories from yesterweek. Slykick, if you'd do me the honors.
So, in another Xbox 180, Microsoft is apparently now going to let indie developers self-publish on Xbox Live Arcade. So basically, this is just further proof that the Xbox One is nothing like what we talked about a couple months ago. Something else that they're talking about is that, oh, we want everybody to be a creator, and later on down the line, there'll be support to allow you to use any Xbox One system as a dev kit, which is cool, but isn't that kind of what the Ouya is already doing right now?
Well, you know, you're right, and that is cool, and it is what the Ouya is doing right now already. Like, that is one of the Ouya functions. But, what is really noteworthy here is that, you know, really, Xbox, Microsoft, I should say, they have done a complete 180. Like, at this point now, literally everything they said at the Xbox One reveal, like, it's basically all out the window now.
You know, it's interesting because we laugh about it, but I mean, really what they're doing is listening to maybe not what every consumer wants, but they're listening to the consumers. They're listening to indie developers. So on one hand, it's like, lol, Xbox. I still don't plan on getting one just because there's nothing that's compelling me to want to jump right away. But
I still have qualms in the context that this doesn't change the fact that their goals were still awful and exploitative of their users and their fans and their, you know, user base and fan base. So to me, this, it doesn't exactly calm all of my concerns, but I do recognize this as a really, I mean, first off, it's a very positive step forward. But as far as the whole aspect of letting any Xbox One unit be used as a dev kit, that's actually pretty forward thinking. And yeah, I mean, as you,
from Microsoft.
Well, right. Like, as you point out, you know, the Ouya has support for that as well. But, you
that's
know,
kind of the Ouya's whole platform.
I don't really see Nintendo or Sony doing this. So of the big three, you know, sort of the major titans of the current marketplace, it is a forward-thinking step for them to do this. It certainly came about by being, you know, chastised by negativity from basically every corner of existence.
Yeah, and you know, I know that a lot of people are disappointed that the Xbox One is not panning out to be anything like it was supposed to be originally, but honestly, we kind of talked about on our GameBuoy Micro, where we talked about the Xbox 180, I really feel like the goals that they have for the Xbox One that they aren't able to put in to this console generation, that they'll look at the Xbox Two a couple years down the line and try and approach it in a way while being more mindful. So, I mean, as much as I may laugh about Microsoft and, you know, they're kind of just the butt of everyone's jokes lately, I mean, they are listening. And, you know, like, I think it could, things could maybe turn around for them, so we'll see.
Yeah, this is certainly my most major concern now taken off the board. I don't know if I'm going to jump on an Xbox One now, but certainly the thing that I was most upset about and most concerned about is now no longer a thing. So, you know, that's exciting. It is exciting to think about that.
Indeed.
Let's see. I think, do you have anything else to say about that?
No, I think I've covered all the bases.
Excellent. Well then, I have two, very, very easy and short follow-ups, which is always my favorite kind. First, we have news that Etrian Odyssey, the, untold Millennium Girl, I'm sorry, my notes on this seem really super jank. Oh yeah, it is. It's Etrian Odyssey Untold, the Millennium Girl. Okay. Is the official release for new Etrian Odyssey or whatever right. It was called in Japan. That'll be releasing here in the US October 1st.
My birthday!
Ooh, hey girl. I wouldn't tell everyone out there in Internet Radio Land that, because now they're all going to stalk you. So have fun with that.
Well, you know, I need some people to want to take me to bed with because of my radio voice.
Don't! No! Also, for the person who said that, thank you, but also now I'm blushing. You're mean. Let's see.
Getting a little tsundere over there. Stop!
Also, Disgaea D2, A Brighter Darkness. I've been super excited for this game. This is, you know, like Disgaea 1 Part 2. Gonna be releasing in North America on October 8th. And Europe on September 27th.
Good for them for getting something early. I mean, they do sometimes, but yay. Man, October's just got so many good releases. Like,
yeah, 2013 entirely, man. Like, kind of ridiculous. And following up, we talked a little bit about this last week. Angry Birds Star Wars 2 is coming. The announcement was made, it's going to be based on the 3 Star Wars movie prequels, and it's going to be hitting September 19th. In addition to coming to mobile devices, it will also be coming to consoles and handheld consoles everywhere.
So pretty much everywhere on everything, because Angry Birds, like, is huge.
Yeah, pretty much that. We also bring news that Injustice, Gods Among Us, you may recall, the Mortal Kombat-style DC fighting game, is getting a 5th DLC character in the form of Martian Manhunter.
Okay, it's an interesting choice.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's a better choice than Scorpion or General Zod, so I'm here for it. There's also going to be a Jon Stewart skin for the Green Lantern. For those of you who do not...
See the gay one?
For those of you who do not follow DC continuity or comic books at all and think that we're talking about Jon Stewart of The Daily Show, let me assure you that we are not.
That would be awesome, though. I would play as Jon Stewart. Wasn't Jon Stewart in a Spider-Man or something?
Was
or
he?
Or was it Stephen Colbert was in a comic book?
I'm sure he was. Lots of people are in comic books. I have a Lady Gaga comic book.
No, I mean, he was specifically in, like, a superhero comic book.
I have a Sarah Palin comic book.
Yikes.
I know this next one is a favorite of yours. Why don't you talk a little bit about it?
Yes, we've got some updates on the Pokemon Rumble U North American release. Here in the States, for those of you who are listening, and I'm sorry, North America is more than the United States. I apologize. So those of you North American listeners will be able to pick up the game on, well, the game's going to be on the eShop for $18, and the figures are going to be $4 each exclusively at GameStop. So that's kind of a little bit of a bummer.
And they're going to be sold in
mystery boxes, yeah, which is interesting. But, I mean, at $4 a pop, you know, that's still less than what Disney Infinity is charging for their playsets. Although Disney Infinity's playsets come with, like, whole new levels of content for your game. So, I mean, you can't really compare it in that way. That said, if I ended up with, like, 2 Squirtles or something, I could be like, oh, hey, can I have one of your Torchix? So, you know...
Then I'd say, LOL, no, have fun with 2 Squirtles.
Well, I'd make a Squirtle squad. It'd be awesome.
Correct answer!
We get it on August 29th.
Never gonna get it.
Now, this joystick article is kind of confusing, because this is coming to Europe... Oh, coming to North America and Europe next month. I don't know how to read headlines. Because Europe actually gets it sooner. They get it on August 15th. But we don't know what the figurines will be, the release of the figurines will be like.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I am looking forward. That's a good price for me. It's not anything to complain about on Kotaku.
So, you may recall, out there in internet radio land, that we have talked previously about Geist Crusher, the upcoming Capcom-driven multimedia IP. It has, you know, manga, anime, novels all coming out. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about the 3DS game that was coming out that appears to be sort of like Shonen Jump meets Monster Hunter. We now have confirmation that that game is being made by Treasure.
What?
I know, right? Like, that's a serious, like, $4.99, are you out of your mind? moment. Like, freaking Treasure, man. Sin and Punishment, Bungaio.
Didn't they do a McDonald's game,
too? Gunstar Heroes. I'm not going to talk about your Mac and
no,
whatever.
It's not McKids. There's another McDonald's game that Treasure did. I'm pretty sure.
I mean, really? Like, is that a thing that happened?
Yeah, it was called McDonald's Treasure Land Adventure, and it was a Mega Drive game.
Oh, I actually did know that at one point in my life.
So no,
that's
I was
awesome.
Not going to talk about McKids.
Okay, well done, and credit to you for that. So yeah, we here at Game Buoy, we are huge fans of Treasure. This is completely freaking awesome, and we are now super stoked for Geist Crusher. It had
Definitely.
Better come out in the U.S.
Man, we should do an episode about AdWords games. That'd be awesome.
We should not do that. I feel bad for our listeners right now. Unless you're going to let me talk about Big Bumpin' for like an hour.
Why wouldn't I? That's like the AdWords game. Anyway, did you put this in the wrong section? Because I think this might be a Doom and Gloom.
No, it's a follow-up.
So, do you want to take it? Or do you want me to take it?
Well,
I'm like, you can have it.
Shadow of the Eternals Kickstarter has relaunched. You know, we've talked quite a bit about the Shadow of the Eternals Kickstarter over the last couple months. This time, I guess what's new is that David Hayter is now involved.
Oh, well, you know, he's got to do something now that he's not going to be part of Metal Gear.
He's going to be voicing the main character in Shadow of the Eternals, and their new funding goal, rather than being $1.5 million, is now $750,000. And it will no longer be an episodic game. Precursor is saying on the Kickstarter page for this new campaign that their goal is to have an 8 to 12 hour game for PC and Wii U with a PS4 release down the line.
Okay, well, best of luck to them.
Yeah, I have to say, if this game gets made, I'll buy it. I'm still on the fence about backing it, but, you know, real true credit to them. It sounds like they're taking criticism in stride and
changing their
game.
You could always close your eyes and pretend it was Solid Snake.
Changing their game plan to sort of suit the feedback of sort of that everyone is giving them. I have no eloquent way to say that today. But credit to them, listening to the fans, making choices to meet our needs. I appreciate that. And I actually am starting to really hope that this goes well.
Indeed.
Can you take this next one, though?
Sure. A game has been approved on Steam Greenlight, and you might be excited to know that it's Deadly Premonition, the director's cut!
Yay.
You sound a little...
No, I actually am very excited. I was just trying to do, like, fake bad voice acting.
No, see, you sounded like that clip that's popular on the internet of Fluttershy, the My Little Pony being like, yay. I'm not a brony, but I've seen that.
I literally don't know what you're talking about.
Like, probably, like, 5 to 10 listeners will be like, here's the clip.
Okay, anyone out there who knows what a Flutterby is, you need to message
Fluttershy.
Us.
Fluttershy, it's a My Little Pony. God, get with the internet.
What the hell is going on in our lives?
Well, you know what the hell's going on in our lives soon? That Square Enix's Chaos Reigns is now on Vita by way of PlayStation Mobile.
And we've talked about this a little bit previously when we were talking about Tokyo Jungle Mobile, you know, coming along the same way. What I thought was really interesting was that the director of the game, Chaos Rings, was very excited about this game being playable on Vita. He feels that it's the ideal way to play it, and that he would like a lot of people to purchase this game so that he could have permission to do Chaos Rings 2 this way.
That's so cool, and I mean, props to Square Enix for making their smartphone games, like, legit games, because if this is a precedent that's being set, I'm all for it.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
More Square Enix on my Vita? More anything on my Vita would be great. But
right. Vita anything. We'd really appreciate
especially
it.
Especially Square Enix. They tend to sell Sony consoles to me, so.
Indeed. And sometimes then you sell them back and then buy them again for the same Square Enix game years later that is still not out today.
Yeah, that's actually a factual statement.
You might be aware of the fact that Evo happened about a week ago.
Yep.
Capcom obviously had, you know, lots of fighting game stuff going on. They also had fighting game stuff going on at their panels at Comic-Con a week earlier. And something that, you know, usually comes up at these events, both Comic-Con and Evo, are Darkstalkers teases. We talked about this last year with, you know, Darkstalkers is not dead. We've been, you know, talking, this has come up repeatedly. And the sad news here is that we know Darkstalkers Resurrection was not a super strong seller. The HD port for downloadable services of two rather popular Darkstalkers games. I mean, you know, within the lens through which you could say Darkstalkers is popular to begin with. So at these events this year, Capcom basically had nothing to say about Darkstalkers. They did not pull a Darkstalkers is not dead. Yoshinori Ono-san, who is like the best troll in existence, did not have people raising dollars out of their wallets so that he could take a picture to show his bosses at Capcom all of the money that Darkstalkers could be making. This was, you know, this was definitely a blow to the Darkstalkers fandom. We have a little bit of silver lining that when interviewed since then, Ono-san has said, you know, that this is still something that they have hope for in the future. It just doesn't appear that we're going to be getting new Darkstalkers in the, you know, immediate sort of on the horizon, so to speak.
Yeah.
I'm very sad about it.
You know, this whole Capcom situation just makes me nervous to the point where I can't even speak properly.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is Game Buoy. We can't really ever speak properly. It's kind of awful.
So, you know what, bro? Since you were a Nintendo loser who got the Wii U, which is a piece of crap, at least you'll be able to play Call of Duty, bro. Which is my way of saying that Call of Duty Ghosts is going to be coming onto Wii U.
Oh, awesome. So can we now take bets on how the dog is going to die on Wii U?
Oh, you think it's going to be different?
No, not actually. I was just calling back to an older episode.
Game Buoy Extra, hashtag.
Oh, yeah, that was Game Buoy Extra.
That might have been the first Game Buoy Extra, actually.
Well, excellent. Yeah, so, you know, this is sort of really straightforward. November 5th, same date as the other consoles are getting Call of Duty Ghosts. We're going to be getting Call of Duty Ghosts on Wii U as well. I had said earlier on this show, not today, but in the previous episode, that if Call of Duty Ghosts came out on the Wii U on the same day and date as the other platforms, that I would buy it.
So you're going to buy it?
So, yeah, I'll put my money where my mouth is.
I wonder if there's going to be functionality where you can use the gamepad and the stylus to pet the dog.
Oh my gosh.
Like a little Nintendogs element, you know? Are you listening?
I really hope that that's a thing that happens.
It probably won't.
I would be so down for a Wii U Caller Duty Dog pet sim. Like, that would be
on
great.
On the Wii Shop, like, $3.99. $3.99? Are you out of your mind?
Girl. In other news, you know, another week, another news story about Rayman Legends. It's also going to be released on PC at launch.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, not for me, personally.
Does what it says on the tin.
I'm still picking it up for Wii U. I mean, sorry.
Yeah. I will too, although, you know, September 3rd in North America, like, that's gonna be a busy week for me.
True.
Anyway.
Too many games, not enough money.
Anyway.
Looks like we'll be eating ramen for the rest of the year.
No, I'll be eating caviar. Have fun with your ramen.
Wow. So we've got a little clarification now on the Final Fantasy X-2 HD remaster drama scene. It will indeed be new, as we have seen on Silicon Era. There is a video clip featuring little snippets, and it has Tidus talking to two new characters, so cool.
I have to say, you know, when I see Tidus talking to two new characters in a 30-minute drama scene, I start to think, like, maybe we really are going to get a 10-3.
Interesting. Too bad it's not going to be Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Well, I mean, just think about it. Like, that's a tremendous amount of effort to be putting into a bonus on an HD set, especially if it has new voiced characters that have names and everything. Like, that seems like more than just a simple little bonus to me. That seems like a lead into something else.
Well, you know, I mean, they are bringing out Kingdom Hearts in HD. I mean, 13 Trilogy is already HD, so maybe they're like, you know, we're bringing some of these experiences that we really personally love into HD so that they can be continued on future consoles.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe we're going to end up with a PS4 Final Fantasy X-3.
Which I know a lot of people would be like, no. No.
I'd day one it. Come at me.
I'd prefer it to a 7 remake. I think it would be a more valuable use of the time.
I can't think of a single Final Fantasy game HD remake I would want to play less than a Final Fantasy VII remake.
Mystic Quest?
I would rather play Mystic Quest HD than Final Fantasy VII HD.
Alright then. Guilty Gear XRD Sign. Am I saying that right?
You are? And I'm going to talk about this one because I like Guilty Gear a lot.
Okay, that's fine.
Guilty Gear XRD Sign is going to be playable in a location test starting August 9th in Japan at the Sega Akihabara Building Number 1.
Cool.
Cabinets running the game will be on the fourth floor from August 9th to August 12th. It looks like several members of Arc System Works Studios will be on hand on the first day of the event from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. That's actually not a lot of time. But oh well. So if we have any listeners in Japan, I kind of feel like we probably don't, but if we do, please go to this and let us know how it is. I'm really, 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 really excited about this game. The more I know about it, the better. The sooner, the better.
Indeed.
I know you're really excited for this one, so why don't you talk about it?
So, remember when we were talking about that game from Axis called Sweet Fuse, and it was about you being Keiji Inafune's niece after he got captured at a theme park?
Yes.
It has a release date.
Woo!
In North America on PSP. Yeah, isn't that just, like, delightful?
I'm so pleased.
It'll be on August 27th at retail, and you can also get it on the PlayStation Network, of course. But if you pre-order it, you can get a necklace with the skull insignia that Count Hogstein wears.
Count Hogstein.
The big fat demon pig
that smokes a cigar.
And has a really badass skull pendant.
I feel like I know a lot of gay dudes who would probably be super into, like, I'm a pig daddy. I smoke cigars. I'm not wearing a shirt. I have a skull on my chest.
Stop what you're doing right now.
Sorry about it. So, have we gotten to this weird last nebulous news point?
We have. This is really weird.
So this morning, and I apologize if we seem a little bit dicey on this. This is news that has broken literally in the last couple of hours.
Yeah, it's hard to follow news when it's just internet drama.
Yeah. Apparently, Phil Fish has canceled Fez 2. Of course, we will have a little bit of egg on our face if this whole thing resolves by the time you're listening to this episode, but we are going to operate under the assumption that that is not a thing that's happening. So the long and short of it is that Phil Fish and Jonathan Blow were asked to comment about the Xbox 180 regarding indie developers. And, you know, basically, Phil Fish and Jonathan Blow, both of whom have been baited by the games media, you know, games journalists, many, many times into saying sort of incendiary remarks that have not really reflected well on anyone and have caused a lot of negativity. Some of these statements of which we have discussed here on this show, so you might say that we're a part of the problem. You know, but their attitude was basically like, how come anytime anything blows up in the indie world, you come to us? Like, you don't ask other indie developers these questions. Why don't you ask someone else for once? And, basically, Game Trailers TV, came at them and was talking about, you know, oh, well, you want coverage of your game when you have a game to promote. But otherwise, if we contact you about anything else, you just blow us off. And Phil Fish, to a point, I guess reached a point where he just canceled Fez 2 and is getting out of the games industry. And, you know, a lot of people are immediately blowing up, oh, Phil Fish is awful, Phil Fish is stupid, dumping a lot of hate on Phil Fish. In fact, you know, I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it. So, you know, whatever. A lot of people that I follow on Twitter have really disappointed me today. I see a lot of people dumping a ton of negativity on Phil Fish as if he's just supposed to sit here and let people treat him awfully and talk badly about him, as if he's lucky to be able to be developing games that we all oh so voraciously consume. Don't get me wrong, I kind of... you know, I've said some really negative things about Phil Fish myself. Lord knows, I wanted to throw him into the very bottom of a slimy crevasse some number of months ago when he had, you know, made his awful comments about Japanese game developers in the current state of the Japanese games industry.
Kind of the Rob Liefeld of the indie gaming scene, isn't he?
Well, I mean, his Except work is super good, so no, but...
Yeah, in terms of... The hate that gets thrown at him, though.
No, I feel you there, and I think that you're absolutely quite right. It's just my problem, the thing that I'm getting stuck on is that, like, we really feel like this guy should be sitting here and taking it. No, he basically, his, you know, the most recent tweet that I've seen from him commenting on this, he, blocked his Twitter. It used to be public, and now it's private, only his friends can see it. And, you know, of course, people are leaking these tweets out to the internet so that people can continue making fun of him and talking about how privileged and self-indulgent and awful he is, which, again, I want to say I disagree with. I don't think anyone should have to take the amount of negativity that he's taken over this or any of the things he's taken so much negativity for, except that awful, stupid Japanese game development comment, which he has apologized for repeatedly. His quote, though, let me get this, because I think this is good. To be clear, I'm not canceling Fez 2 because some boorish fuck said something stupid. I'm doing it to get out of games. And I'm getting out of games because I choose not to put up with this abuse anymore. I feel like that's a powerful statement, and I feel like it's a statement that if anyone said that about their job, which is what he's doing, but if anyone said that in your job, and really reflect for a moment on within your own lives, if you're listening to this. Like, if someone you work with said that and was like, yeah, I'm getting out of here. I'm done putting up with being treated this way. Like, you would pat that person on the back, right? Like, that would be like, yeah, you do you. Take care of you. Have self-respect and dignity and walk away from something that is treating you awful. And that's what Phil Fish is doing here. And, you know, I have to admit, I hope that this thing resolves. I hope that he... calms down. I hope that he steps back and says, you know, I would rather have an honest dialogue about this and continue making my game because I love making games and people love playing my games. Like, that would be great. But if that doesn't happen, I will still never side against Phil Fish on this.
I mean, I think any time that someone who's contributed good things to the gaming industry steps out, it's a loss. And I mean, like, you know, Fez was really popular. Braid from Jonathan Blow was really popular. It would be a shame for these people to not make games, even if these games are not personally your faves. I mean, just think if you judged that game company on Flow before they put out Flower or Journey. That's kind of...
Flow was an incredible game, though.
But, I mean, I'm just saying that that idea evolved into something even greater, so, you know.
Yeah. Well, again,
I'm just saying that, you know, even if Fez isn't your thing, maybe Phil Fish had a journey in him somewhere.
Yeah, and well, I mean, really I would say that Fez... Honestly, I would say Fez already was that caliber of game. I think Fez is really quite something special. And I think that the industry really will lose to not have this game and not to have these voices contributing to the discussion of games. So, you know, I hope I don't want to say that I think he's overreacting. I don't actually think he's overreacting. And, you know, I sort of just explained why. But, I hope that he steps back and feels that he overreacted and comes back and has a dialogue about this. I think that that would be a good thing for everyone involved, and I'm really sort of disappointed at how much negativity I've seen in the hours since this all came out. People are just attacking this guy left and right as if he should be happy to be abused and be treated in such a way and talked about in such a way that we would not expect of anyone else in any other creative industry, I don't think.
Indeed.
Man, I hate to go out on such a bad note, but I think that was the last of our follow-ups. Do you have anything to say about anything else to say about anything else?
No, I mean, it's really... I mean, you know...
If you have a different opinion than me, you can voice it. I won't attack you, I promise.
This guy, Marcus Beer, from Game Trailers, which is where this... is it a video podcast? I don't really follow it, but I mean, it's a video blog thing that they do. Apparently, Phil Fish had tweeted at this Marcus Beer guy, Annoyed Gamer, to kill himself. So... You know, it's just, it's messy, and I mean, I think it really speaks to, I mean, because you know, the whole issue of game journalists and their responsibility and, you know, how they interact with developers, and I mean, I think it raises a lot of questions about that relationship, and, you know, we're just always kind of keeping our eye on the games journalism field, so I think we should just move on because I could just start ranting.
Oh yeah, apparently according to Verge, Beer, before it came to that, Beer called Phil Fish a hipster, a tosspot, a wanker, and a fucking asshole. Is apparently what incited the kill yourself comment. So I'm not saying anyone is in the right. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to look at where we're at, what happened today.
Yeah.
And how I feel about, you know, sort of the fan reaction of this. Like, I really can't speak about who's right or wrong about Marcus Beer from Game Trailers or Phil Fish from, you know, Fez.
Polytron,
yeah. I don't know or care. I just want it to work out. I'm having a hard time with people who are citing against an individual for a games journalism outlet that is coming after these guys for not being cooperative. I mean, I just kind of feel like someone removing themselves from the equation, like that's a valid response when you're in something right. This negative. And I think it's kind of gross that people want to attack for that.
And you know, fortunately the few indie developers that I've and indie game creators that I've ever interacted with on the internet have been totally awesome, and I really like
absolute
what they do.
Absolute princes. Yeah, quite a few indie developers, especially here in the Bay Area. Super awesome, high-quality people. I street pass with them all the time. I tweet at them often. all just really incredible human beings and really awesome and cool. I'm sorry, continue.
But I'm saying, it just kind of makes me, as a person on a podcast, really mindful about what I say. I mean, you know, and I've tried to not be super negative. I mean, I think most of my negativity has been directed at, you know, larger corporations like Sony. Although, you know, then I did have my little slip-up with Ouya, but, you know, that said, I mean, I think there's a responsibility with how you express your views. It's one thing to raise concerns about Phil Fish's comments about, you know, Japanese gaming industry. It's another to say that Phil Fish is a fucking asshole, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Whiny winker, you know. I mean, it's just, you know, be responsible about how you talk about people.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, let's wrap this up and let's move forward.
And I feel like I should have my foot in my mouth for talking about a certain person who does not have herpes.
Yeah, I will not talk about that person in that context anymore. I was hoping we could just move past it for forever.
Anyway, now it's time for news.
Oh my god, news.
Oh my god, news.
Oh my god, no.
Stop. So, we mentioned that Evo took place about a week ago. There was a really notable announcement made. That is that Ultra Street Fighter 4 is going to be a game that is actually released in early 2014. This is really exciting. They're going to have a ton of balance changes, new stages, new modes, other features, and 5 new characters. The 5th character is a mystery character whom the entire internet is currently trying to guess. It's apparently someone whom already exists as a character, but never in the context of a fighting game previously.
Interesting.
So, you know, bets are all over the place with Asura from Asura's Wrath, although Capcom has responded and said it's not Asura, which makes me very sad. People have guessed various iterations and characters from Mega Man games. A really popular guess is the female lead from Remember Me.
Oh, huh.
So, a lot of speculation going on about that right now all over the internet. It's a lot of fun. But the other 4 characters, the ones whom we do know, and Sly Kick, you might want to get your golf clap ready. We have Elena coming over from Street Fighter 3. We have Rolento coming over from Final Fight and the Street Fighter Alpha series. We have Hugo coming, I believe also from Street Fighter 3, but he may have appeared otherwise also. And that girl is poison!
I was totally going to do that, and I didn't know that you were going to do that, too.
Of course I did! You know, we're huge fans of Poison here on the show.
Yeah, you know, we love Velvet.
We love Poison, superb character. We talked about her a lot on our LGBT issues episode like a year ago. I'm just very, very, very excited to have this character coming into Street Fighter 4. And also awesome is that a pirate costume for her has been confirmed as a pre-order bonus.
Yes.
So, that's super, 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 super exciting. Please look forward to it.
We got Sexy Sailor Chris in Resident Evil and now Pirate Poison.
Yes.
Officially part of the SS Game Buoy.
And, you know, the last super notable thing about Ultra Street Fighter 4, and then we will move forward because I know that we're trying to get the rest of this episode on in a hurry since, you know, with 2 episodes this week, it's going to be kind of a busy one. Effectively 2 episodes, I should say. But the last note on Ultra Street Fighter 4 is that Capcom's balancing plan for this game, rather than going with the traditional tiered balancing system that has become the sort of de facto approach for fighting game balancing over the last decade or so, is that Capcom is just going to try to focus less on nerfing characters down to the same level and more on making every character just more threatening to the point that they are all an equal threat.
Interesting.
These are, of course, incredibly big britches to fill. I have no idea if they're actually going to be able to, you know, swing it, because obviously, you know, these fighting games, balancing them, they have a lot of really complex parts. You have all kinds of emergent gameplay coming out once these games go out to the wild. You know, the professionals, the Daigos of the world, the Justin Wongs of the world, you know, they figure out how to exploit these game mechanics using individual facets of characters that testers and designers never even think of. So it'll be interesting to see if Capcom can make good on this promise, but I am very excited for them to be taking an approach like this, because I feel like it'll be better for the community. And obviously, you know, for people who like to play sort of characters a little off the beaten path, Hakan players, for example, like I know at Evo, there were some really incredible Hakan matches against Balrog, which I guess is like the only matchup where that character is really a viable option in tournament play. It would be interesting to see more Hakan players, like, oh, Hakan has been balanced to be a threat to everyone now. I can use Hakan if I really like, you know, greasy wrestler guys. That's cool.
And who doesn't love those greasy Turkish oil red throats? I'm like, I can't even talk because
girl,
of the sound.
Sometimes I look up videos of Turkish oil wrestling on YouTube and I'm just like, this is basically porn.
Right? I remember there was a BuzzFeed. Not that I'm really a big fan of BuzzFeed, but there was a BuzzFeed.
You say that, but you bring up BuzzFeed like every week.
That's because they're kind of becoming self-aware that they're a joke. It's awesome. You know what else is awesome?
What else is awesome?
That the creator of Mutant League Football.
I'm a big fan of that. Go on.
Registered U.S. trademarks for Mutant Football League and Freak League, which suggests that the beloved Mutant Football League of yesteryear will be making a return. We're not really sure if this is going to be with EA or, you know, if it's just going to be an indie game, but if you like mutants, if you like football, then this is big news.
Oh, that's exciting.
Do you want to take this next one?
I actually really do. Dan Teasdale, formerly of the rock band series developer studio Harmonix.
Oh, that's fitting for this week.
As well as, you know, he worked also at the Twisted Pixel, whom you might be familiar with, having worked on the game The Gunstringer for Xbox Live Kinect. That was that Kinect game. has founded No Goblin. This is an indie studio that aims to become, quote-unquote, the leading developer of original mechanic-driven video games.
Yep.
Apparently, No Goblin will focus its development efforts on original IP and will actively avoid characters and settings steeped in sci-fi and fantasy tropes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I have a lot of respect for Dan Teasdale. He used to be a real notable game. Real notable game. He used to be a real notable name in
and the first
games.
Game from No Goblin is Dan Teasdale the game. A real
right?
notable game.
When he was talking up Rock Band and sort of the ways that they were taking the Guitar Hero formula to the next step back when Rock Band was, you know, in development. And as we'll talk about a little bit in the episode that we're recording tomorrow.
The B-side,
which probably y'all will have, you know, by the time you're listening to this. I really feel like Rock Band was very successful in taking that next mm-hmm. leap over where Guitar
well,
Hero
Harmonix,
was.
Harmonix just had amazingly talented people. I mean, you know, in the context of Rock Band, there are a lot of musicians. I mean, in Harmonix, like, largely all of them were musicians, but they're just really creative people. And, you know, as much as I love sci-fi and fantasy genres, you know,
we don't need another studio working in that
yeah,
space.
I mean, I'm really excited to see what's going to be popping up.
Let's see. Next up, there is at Comic-Con, it was announced that there is going to be a Tomb Raider comic that leads directly into the Tomb Raider sequel.
Cool.
Dark Horse is going to be publishing this in 2014, and the series is going to be written, and this is why I'm very excited about it, by writer Gail Simone. You might be familiar if you're a comics reader with her work on such series as Batgirl.
cool.
I'm a big fan. I think Gail Simone is completely incredible. I like Tomb Raider a lot. We talked about that a lot here on the show, so I don't want to get stuck on it. But overall, I'm very excited about this information. I will definitely be reading this comic as it comes out. And, you know, this is great. This tells us that there's going to be a Tomb Raider sequel probably next year. Yay!
Yay! Can I take this next one?
You sure can.
So, I don't think we had a chance to talk about this teaser that Game Freak did, right? Because this was, this was in between.
The way the timing worked out, we just didn't know.
So, the internet, if you were paying attention to this, the internet was kind of like, oh, what's going on? Because Game Freak had been teasing some new collaboration. It had, a silhouetted creature and saying, oh, the popular game played around the world will be reborn. And a surprising collaboration. People were like, oh, it's got to be some sort of Pokemon thing. But it's not. It's Solitaire Horse, which is a 3DS eShop game combining solitaire and horse racing.
Ah!
They're like these adorable little horse sprites.
And oh my god, solitaire. They're so cute! Also solitaire!
I like solitaire, I like Game Freak. I'm not really into horse racing,
Two great tastes that taste great together?
Well, like I said, I'm not really into horse racing, but this might get me into it.
You like solitaire and you like Game Freak, so those are great tastes.
Those are great tastes. Yeah, I don't know, but, I could not with the movie Seabiscuit, I'm sorry. But I will definitely be picking up Solitaire Horse, assuming it comes west. But with the support that Nintendo's been giving to eShop stuff, I think it's pretty likely. It'll be, on July 31st on the Japanese eShop for 500 yen.
Oh, excellent. Please look forward to it.
Solitaire Horse.
Solitaire Horse. I'm going to play that, for sure.
Yeah.
Let's see. This is going to be a real quick hit. Dragon Age saves have been confirmed to be importable to Dragon Age Inquisition, also known as Dragon Age 3.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's not like a Commander Shepard sort of thing.
Well, this is more because, the choices you make in the Dragon Age games sort of change the game world a lot. So this is less of, bringing your character over and more bringing your world over, so that you're in the same world that your previous characters had changed.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I'm actually really stoked about that. Oh, speaking of being stoked about something, I think you want to take this next one.
Yes.
Well, you're, more like stroked, am I right?
Oh, my. So, I have to get out my George Takei voice for this. A penis-powered game is getting Oculus Rift support. This game is custom-made 3D, and in a way this kind of harkens back to our adult gaming episode, because custom-made 3D is an erotic computer game with a phallic controller, and it will now be supporting Oculus Rift.
That sounds pretty funny. Oh, custom made 3D. You had said custom made 3D. I'm like, how do you make a 3D custom?
No, MAID, sexy made.
Well, hey.
This controller is called Juicy Air, and it has an analog stick and action button, a left and a right click, and responds and reacts in real time to your stroke speed and depth.
Oh, fun.
So, does it actually go on the dong, or how does that work?
So, at Comic-Con, Capcom announced that they are...
Hashtag GameBuoy Extra. How do you think the penis controller works?
I'm not repeating that hashtag. Y'all are on your own with Slagkick if you want to talk about that. That's nastiness.
You nasty...
You know what? It's not actually nastiness. Human sensuality is awesome, and I'm very sex positive. I just, for whatever reason, have a really hard time talking on this show about that sort of thing. So,
because of certain comments that
keep
have
been, at, do you have fun?
Certain comments that have come in on our social links.
No, see, that's not even it. Like, that is whatever. I don't even mind. Frankly, it's super flattering. But I am just not here to talk about dong controllers.
Well, better get over it when we do our adult gaming part two.
So yeah, at Comic-Con, Capcom announced that they are reviving Strider.
Yes, this is, the internet has been blowing up over this.
You know, I'm really excited because this game, Strider, it's being developed by Double Helix, which, we talked a little bit of crap about them a few weeks ago. They're working on Killer Instinct currently.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to say that the angle that, or the stand that we ultimately took was that, you know, all devs start somewhere. Even our beloved Way Forward had a history of, you know, some somewhat questionable licensed games, much as Double Helix currently does.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, cause for concern with regard to Killer Instinct. And so it's, you know, it's obviously still a cause for concern with Strider as well. However, they're making a Strider Metroidvania game. This is going to be coming out on Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, PC, and Xbox One. And I have to say, like, yeah, okay, this studio is somewhat questionable. I'm really concerned. I don't know if I can have a lot of faith in them. But my body is ready. Like, a Metroidvania game, like, a Metroidvania Strider game.
Well, I mean, it has,
that just sounds freaking
it has
awesome.
People involved from the original Strider team, right?
It does, yeah. Capcom specifically has a little group of people in Japan that are working with Double Helix to make sure that the project stays on track.
So, yeah, maybe Double Helix just needs a little handholding. And
a lot of studios do initially. Like, when you're establishing yourself and sort of making a name for yourself and learning how to make quality games, a lot of times the first step, like what Nintendo has done with a lot of Western studios, Monster Games, who worked on a bunch of 3DS, like, first-party titles, Pilot Wings.
Yeah.
You know, Nintendo has absolutely held their hand and been like, this is how you make a game the Nintendo way. It kind of feels like Capcom is holding Double Helix's hand and is being like, oh, this is how you make a Strider Metroidvania game. And I am totally here for that.
Like, thanks, Capcom.
Right? So, obviously, you know, we don't know a whole lot about the game yet. It's been announced for like a week. But it's gonna be more like the NES Strider game and less like the arcade, Genesis, PS1 Strider games. Please look forward to it. I think it sounds super good. I'm really excited for it. And do you have anything to say about how exciting this is?
No, I mean, it's great that Capcom's at least doing something with an old IP. Even though it's not Mega Man. In other news of Capcom doing awesome things.
Yeah?
They'll be doing some sort of collaboration. We don't really know what it involves. Aside from the fact that it's going to be involving Lost Planet 3 and Pacific Rim, which is the movie event of the summer.
Yeah,
I'm sorry if you disagree.
I effing love Pacific Rim so much. I've seen it 3 times already. I really loved it. Seen it in the theater multiple times, like I just said 5 seconds ago. I'm going to see it a couple more times in the theater before it goes out of theaters. And I'm absolutely here for this. Like, if this content, whatever it is, comes to the U.S., I will buy Lost Planet 3 for this.
Yep, me too.
I bought Lost Planet 2. I liked it. I didn't love it. I was saying, oh, I'm not going to do Lost Planet 3. I didn't like Lost Planet 2 enough.
Lost Planet 3 is kind of shaping up to look not so bad, though.
Yeah, yeah, especially if it has Pacific Rim content. Like, I am here for that.
Mm-hmm.
With that having been said, I think it's time to get a little dark.
Dealing in dark-sided stuff.
Doom and gloom.
First up, we have news here that Monaco Dev
Andy Schatz.
Thank you.
I'm not making fun of his name.
No, that's his name.
It just sounds like chat, which is the pest.
Stop. Like, no, just stop. Just already let it go.
No, has been very
disappointed with the Xbox Live Arcade version's sales performance. Specifically saying that this was effort and time, quote-unquote, largely wasted due to how low these sales were. You know, I have played Monaco quite a bit on Steam. Anyone out there who is listening to this, we now have a Steam group on
Steam.
Yeah. We have a Steam group on Steam for Game Buoy Podcast. You should definitely look us up. But I'm a huge fan of Monaco. I think it's a really great game. I'm really sad to see that, quote end quote, "I was never depending on the Xbox being our primary revenue generator, but I was very disappointed in Xbox sales nonetheless. We put a ton of effort porting the game, and to have that effort be largely wasted was really disappointing." That's really sad to me, because this is a super legitimate game. And this makes me feel like maybe a lot of people aren't playing it. So if you have, hopefully, a PC with Steam, download Monaco. You will probably like it. It's really good. Would you like to take the next one?
Yeah, this is a little bit of a letdown. The MTV multiplayer blog did a nice little write-up about kind of summarizing some work that Gamma Sutra, Edge, and Game Industry did about Ouya sales figures. And it's just kind of like a mixed bag. Like Matt Thorson, who is the creator of Towerfall,
is kind of good looking.
Is pretty happy, but the creator of Bomb Squad gets about 70 sales a day. The creator of Bomb Ball making about $30 a day. And the creator of Oregon Trail, which of course is the like zombie version of the Oregon Trail.
Oh, hey, I'm here for that.
Yeah, it's sold about half of what the creator's low-end predictions were.
Wow.
And, you know, I had read another article somewhere on the internet that was talking about kind of, like, I don't want to say adoption rates, but, like, the comparison. It might have been one of these articles that Multiplayer Blog is pulling from. Kind of just talking about how many people downloaded demos versus how many people actually paid. So it's a little disappointing. I mean, you know, we want to see these clever games succeed, and, you know, that's not going to happen if people don't buy them.
Indeed. Let's see. We also have a report that EA Sports is recording exceptionally soft pre-orders on current-gen sports games in the run-up to next-gen.
You know, like soft rock and hard rock.
According to brand president Peter Moore, this is anticipated and as planned. Moore added that he expects a boost closer to the Xbox One and PS4 hitting retail shelves as consumers realize that there may not be enough next-gen hardware to go around.
Hmm.
I guess, you know, really the thrust here is current-gen sports games not getting pre-ordered like they normally are, Madden and what have you. And Peter Moore thinks that that's because people are just like, oh, whatever, I'll just get Madden for PS4 or Xbox One when I get that. And he's kind of like, LOL, no, you're not going to be able to get one at launch, so you better get this game for current-gen. Which is a cute thought.
Yeah. I have one more breaking news of doom and gloom. My super cute favorite pair of shoes are falling apart.
That is both doomy and gloomy. I guess you won't be wearing them to Podcast Cross Zone next weekend.
I guess I won't. I guess I'll have to go buy some cute new shoes. Oh my god, shoes!
And let's news. Get them! I'm just going to take this real quick unplanned moment to remind everyone out there that if you're listening to this, probably this coming Saturday, we here at Game Buoy will be appearing with Koopa Club, Orange Lounge Radio,
and Game Bar,
Horde House, and Game Bar for the Podcast Cross Zone.
Podcast Cross Zone.
At Gamer X in San Francisco. If you're going to be there, you should be at our panel, which is Saturday night at
6 p.m.
6 p.m. I'm happy you just said that, because right I nearly said 6:30. It is right before dinner. If you go, be sure to ask us for that thing we mentioned in a previous episode,
mm-hmm.
because I actually have that for you.
Mm-hmm.
getting back to our last doom and gloom story, we have what is the opposite of a doom and gloom. I guess you could call this like a yay and praise. I don't know. Like, what's the opposite of doom and gloom? A yip and yay.
Yip and yay.
Activision Blizzard, in an $8.2 billion deal, is buying its majority stakes back
from Vivendi.
From Vivendi, yes.
That was,
which,
like,
you may recall, Activision merged with 5 years ago. I would call this very unexpected news, but it's actually really good. And, you know, in the immediate future, it's going to be hard to hate Actibliz the way that people currently do.
I think out of all of the people involved, that Blizzard probably has the most to gain from this, because, I mean, they were really the part of Vivendi that, was really, kind of pre-existing.
I think that that's probably a way to look at it. I don't know if I quite agree, but...
Because they kind of operate not independently, but, I mean, they don't really have Activision breathing down their necks so much, do they? I always thought it was Vivendi that was more breathing down their necks.
I won't pretend to know what goes on behind closed doors at Blizzard.
Oh, I know what I wish went on behind closed doors at Blizzard. Hey, Chris Metzen.
Girl.
There's a lot of good-looking guys who work at Blizzard.
But, you know, you look at, like, you know, Activision is really throwing a lot of weight behind Bungie for this Destiny thing.
Yeah, which I actually kind of want.
My understanding, of course, is that that game is now looking at a 2014 release. I just heard music from it at Video Games Live last night, in fact.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of music and gaming.
Indeed. They were talking about how, Destiny was set to come out next year in 2014. Paul McCartney did music for it.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty good. And I cannot help but wonder, you know, if part of why Activision has been in a position to throw just an astronomical amount of money behind this project isn't because they believe in it and don't really have to worry about Vivendi anymore. Because obviously you can't make a deal like this off the cuff. Like, this must have been in the works for months and months at this point.
So, you know, we'll be wishing the best for Actibliz.
Yeah, I'm on Bobby Kotick's side on this one. Godspeed you, man. You do you.
Never thought you'd say those words, huh?
Yeah, right? Like, Activision is the biggest indie developer in the world now.
Can you really call them an indie developer, though?
Are they? They're owned by themselves, and they self-publish their games. I mean... I literally can't talk right now. Like, I hadn't thought about it.
Yeah, but, I mean, wouldn't that be like saying that Nintendo's first-party stuff is indie because they self-publish it?
No. They're a platform holder.
Okay. So you're talking about third-party...
I was making a joke. I was primarily making a joke, okay?
And I tried to get logical, and I ruined your joke. Sorry.
You did.
My shoes are falling apart. I'm just really upset.
Stop! I've heard enough about your damn shoes.
You know what you want to hear instead?
I wasn't done talking about this.
Oh, sorry.
So, okay.
Well, then maybe you should keep talking.
Yeah.
Keep it moving.
Let me get this moving.
Keep it moving.
Basically, I'm really excited about this. I feel like Activision, for all of the hate that we and the entire internet gives Activision, they have tremendously benefited everyone's existence in games culture and the industry overall over the last several decades with some really incredible software, some really incredible support. Ultimately, I think gaming as a whole is better for the existence of Activision, if I'm being completely honest. That having been said... I'm really just super happy to see them get out from under Vivendi because, you know, maybe we'll get to start seeing them take games a little more seriously, see a little bit less of sort of the super corporate, what is that, strip mining of entire genres, the music game genre, Guitar Hero and all that.
We'll
see a little bit less of that without Vivendi breathing down their necks to, be in the black every quarter.
I wonder how this will affect
Blizzard,
because, I mean... A lot of people think that the reason that they've gone so cash shop these past couple of years is because of Vivendi.
I don't. I think it probably has more to do with declining subscribers numbers, which we now know they are further down another like 600,000 over last quarter. I think that that probably has more to do with it. Like, when you go from having, what, like, almost 12 million to having, like, 7 million, like, yeah, you're not making as much money. You're not going to have the income you've become accustomed to. You're not going to be able to pay people what they've gotten used to making and all that. If you don't want to lay people off, you're going to have to open up a cash shop. That's just how economics works.
Yeah.
So, to me, that's the cash shop angle. I'm really excited, though. I really hope that this means we are going to see a reinvention on behalf of Activision Blizzard. Maybe I'm being too optimistic, but I would rather that than be too pessimistic. With that having been said, I think it is, in fact, time for...
I said, hey, what's going on?
So, Captain Spike, what you been playing?
Borderlands 2. No, actually, I did play a little bit of Borderlands 2.
Though, what else have you been playing?
Primarily, I have played three games this past week. I played Deadpool. I played Rogue Legacy. And I played Shin Megami Tensei 4.
Save Shin Megami for last, because that's pretty much what I've been playing. So.
Okay. Deadpool was really cool. I'm really happy with the writing and the comedy. And, like, it's very much a Deadpool game. They really leverage the license super well. There's a lot of Logan in it, some Rogue, some Psylocke, some B-tier villains. It was really cool. I'm really excited. It's super over the top. The thing that sucks is that it's an awful fucking game. Pardon my French, but, like, it's not... Okay, I don't want to say it's not that hard to make a competent Devil May Cry clone, but they came really close. Like, they nailed so many aspects of making that style of game. The controls, I think, feel really good, but it's just, like, the level designs and enemy layouts are just awful. And it's like, oh, enter a large circular room. Now 40 enemies are going to flood into it. Kill those 40 enemies, and then 40 more will come out. Okay, good, now progress to the next room where this will happen again. Rinse, wash, repeat.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm still trying to get through it because the writing is super funny. There's some really unique and cool scenarios. But overall, as a game, I think it kind of fails, and I'm really disappointed about that. Rogue Legacy is incredible, and it is made of sunshine and candy and wonderful, and I want to play more right now. It is a roguelike game in the style of a Metroidvania. I am here for it. It speaks very specifically to my tastes, and if you have not played it yet, there is a demo on Steam. I highly recommend that you download it and play it and fall in love and buy it.
Alrighty.
Why don't you tell me about Shin Megami Tensei 4, and I will add in my thoughts.
Alright, well, my perspective on Shin Megami Tensei 4 is kind of... I don't know if I'm going to say it's unique, but it's definitely different than yours is, Captain Spike, because this is my first mainline Shin Megami Tensei game. And so, you know, my experiences have just been with Persona, so it's interesting for me to see, like, what from the mainline series that Persona borrowed from. You know, like, just the common elements, really. It's kind of interesting to see. And but I did notice it's a lot more hardcore than Persona is. Well,
what quantify hardcore for me?
I'm dying a lot, and that didn't happen in Persona.
Okay, well, that is...
Because on Persona, I was playing at a lower difficulty then.
Well, and that's something that's interesting, because, you know, the Persona games are widely regarded as the more accessible cousin to the main Shin Megami Tensei series. So I'm not really that surprised to hear you say that. Shin Megami Tensei, as a series, they've always been very difficult, always been very hard. A lot of people
really grindy, right?
A lot of people look at them, not necessarily grindy. I think that a lot of times people who are not used to playing these games do play them grindy. Like, any problem you're having, you probably could just get around it by grinding it out and then going in. But you might, you know, also just have a lot of luck really focusing on building up a team for every sort of boss encounter.
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, I'm fighting a fire element boss. I had better build up an entire team of ice element demons. And then through, you know, the press turn system, you would you'd almost just be given a win. It wouldn't even be super hard. Otherwise, you're going to have, you know, a lot of trouble getting a non-optimal team through specific fights and scenarios and sections in the dungeon Naraku. So, the easy way to remedy that is just, oh, I'm a grind. And then, bam, you're done. But if you play smarter and more direct in the way that the game is trying to tell you to play it, you'll get through that way as well. Probably a little easier.
You know who I'm here for?
Who are you here for?
Walter.
Yeah, me
He's
too.
He's super fine.
He is fine. I'm like, dude, if you were a dude, I would totally dude you, dude.
Dude you?
Yeah.
Like, dude, okay, dude.
No, I mean, I'd be like, dude.
Okay, dude. I'm really looking forward to really diving into it. On first blush, I would probably say that Persona is a little more my style. That said, I'm not giving up on Shin Megami Tensei 4 at all.
Excellent. I'm happy to hear that. I have been watching the Persona 4 animation. I might pick Persona 4 the game back up and play it after that.
Yeah, I really like Persona 4 the animation because it's basically the game. But it is really weird to see the protagonist go from, you know, being a silent protagonist in the game. Well, I mean, not really silent, but, you know.
To having a personality.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, oh, this is a little bit different than my character, but, I'm still glad to see all my favorite scenes from the game in the show.
Indeed. Well, unless you have anything else that you've been playing that you'd like to talk about.
You know, the only other thing I really would want to talk about is that my Animal Crossing New Leaf experience is finally winding down.
Well, we're not New Leaf buoys, so keep it up. Let's keep moving.
Let's just say that I did the beautiful town ordinance, which prevents weeds from growing, because I'm kind of on the downward spiral. I can't even talk right now.
Okay, so you're using your what I'm playing this week to talk about a game you're not playing this week. Alright!
I'm following up. I'm doing a What's Up follow-up.
That's not a thing.
But I was playing it since, I'm just saying that my playtime has been winding down. And, it just kind of got me thinking.
Every day is a winding road.
I was more into my favorite mistake, but well done. the thing is that it kind of got me thinking about, we talked about that Steel Diver was going to be the first free-to-play from Nintendo.
Yeah.
And that I really wonder if that could be a valuable direction for Animal Crossing to go in, instead of...
Animal Crossing sold so many freaking units. It's like the second best eShop seller of retail titles ever.
I realize that.
I think that they would be losing a tremendous profit.
But I just mean, it always seems to happen. I don't know. It always seems to happen in Animal Crossing. And this just might...
Would it be beneficial for you as a player? Yes, I think so. Would it be beneficial for Nintendo as a profit maker? I don't.
And I think it's maybe less to do with, the release model and more with something in the game design process. It's just, it always happens with Animal Crossing for me that the replayability just dies, and then I just, my favorite animals move away, and I don't have the heart to go back. So I don't know what they could do.
So if you could microtransaction them back, you'd be into it. Is that what you're saying?
No, I want to microtransaction stuff into my house. Be like, oh yeah, I want to buy furniture.
I feel like I don't even know you anymore.
I want to buy furniture. No, but what I really want is just a way for it to be compelling to come back to and not punishing it to set aside. Does that make sense? It feels like Animal Crossing, for me, is always played in a burst and then that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how that's alleviated by being free to play.
Maybe it wouldn't be, but I'm just saying I think the series could benefit by, maybe addressing that. I don't know. I mean, whatever. I mean, they're selling enough to keep making more, so maybe they're like, it's your problem if you stop playing and your animals move away.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of people, certainly I see people on Twitter and Tumblr And I know that a lot of people in the Japanese communities still play this game, like, every day, like, a ton. So, yeah, I mean, if it's not clicking for you, then maybe it's just not a good match for you to be to yeah. pick up these
and
games.
I suppose another Game Buoy Extra, hashtag Game Buoy Extra, how do you think that the Animal Crossing series could increase replay value?
No, please don't tweet us about Animal Crossing. Tweet Slagkick that personally.
You can tweet it at Slagkick if you really want.
Like, okay, we'll read your tweets on air. My thing is, like...
Yeah, you played Animal Crossing for 3 days and stopped, and I didn't even get to give you your Virtual Boy.
Yeah, it's like that with every Animal Crossing game. Play it for 3 days, and then move on.
And then you feel like you get enough out of the $40 that you spent?
I buy tons of games that I play even less than that. I'm not tripping.
I don't know, it sounds like there could be some replay value added for you too, but...
Sometimes I buy bread and I don't eat it all. I don't talk about how we can change bread design so that I eat it all.
Hashtag Game Buoy. Food Buoy Extra. How can you change bread? No, don't really tweet us about Food Buoy Extra.
Like, no, I'm not trying to be rude. I'm trying to wrap my head around, like, games are games. Sometimes they're a good fit, sometimes they're not. Clearly, Animal Crossing is a good fit for enough people that this game design is compelling and they continue playing it.
I'm just wondering how they could be more addictive.
Well, maybe you should just go back in time and ask yourself how you got to a point in your life where you were cutting class to play every day.
And with that, let's go ahead and move on to our social links.
Psychic, let me just say, I bust your chops on this show all the time, but I can't think of anyone else I'd rather do it with.
Thanks. We had a social link. We had a social links question of the week this week, as we very typically do. And this week, our question of the week was: this week we're going to be talking about rhythm games, which of course is coming in our B-side. That wasn't on the question of the week.
No, it wasn't. We're going to answer your social links right now, but you won't hear our discussion until part B of this episode, just so we're clear.
Please look forward to it.
Please look forward
to it. So let me restart that again. This week we're going to be talking about rhythm games. Have a favorite? What was your first? We got a tweet from Fox Van Allen who said, Patty Cake.
Oh.
First rhythm game.
Now, was that his first or was that his favorite?
Presumably both.
We're playing Patty Cake in studio now.
Patty Cake in the studio. Wicked from the Nerdgasm Network. You know, and I know he goes by John on Nerdgasm Network, but I'm just so used to calling him Wicked. Sorry, Wicked. Commented on Facebook that first rhythm game ever was Guitar Hero 2. Someone I was living with brought it home from a friend's place, and I just couldn't get over the soundtrack. I was lousy at the actual guitar playing, but Primus, Alice in Chains, Nirvana, Megadeth, Spinal Tap, Death Clock, and bands I never heard of, like The Sword and Anarchy Club. Okay, I'm with you about on half of those artists. My favorite has to be Rock Band 2, mainly because I haven't gotten my hands on 3 yet. For me, the soundtrack of the games were more the reason I picked up so many games than the actual gameplay. Not to take away from the gameplay, but I don't remember any Guitar Hero Rock Band game that didn't have a killer soundtrack. Well, maybe Rock Band Country.
How about Band Hero?
Band Hero had a good soundtrack. That had, like, 2 Taylor Swift songs. Are you for reals?
You're using that as an argument for. I'm using that same statement as an argument against.
I'm sorry that you're not down with the T-Swizzle, okay?
Stop! Move, just, do not pass go. Just go to the next one.
Osfer left a comment on Facebook. Dance Dance Revolution Max, because hell yes, that was my first rhythm game. My favorite is DDR Extreme in the arcade.
I'm agreeing with you. I like DDR Extreme a lot. We used to have an arcade machine of that at the bowling alley I used to manage, and I would basically just play it all night. Like,
yeah,
I'm
that was,
totally
that was a
here
good,
for that.
DDR.
Totally here for
that. It's interesting to see Wicked bring in the Guitar Hero element. Osper bringing the Dance Dance Revolution elements. As we will talk about on the B-side, a lot of variety in rhythm gaming.
What else do we have in the mailbag?
Jeremy from Koopa Club Podcast said that the first rhythm game I played with any regularity was Guitar Hero 3, only because I play IRL guitar. That was me messing up, not him. and thought it was novel. Basically ignored the genre until Theater Rhythm, why can't I talk? Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy.
To be fair, that one is more on Square Enix than you, because that is a weird word.
It's like almost as bad as Exord from Guilty Gear.
It's not that bad. Move on.
Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy was released, which I played like a fiend for about 3 months. Recently getting into In the Groove, though I suck super bad at it, lol.
Get into the groove, boy, you get the groove.
I didn't say stop.
And I own a copy of Rhythm Heaven Fever that I haven't really played.
Great game.
Great game, yeah.
Let me also say Theater Rhythm is so good.
It's so good.
Oh, I know that you're going to be there for the, I'm talking to you as if you can respond to me right now. That's awful.
Probably get a tweet or a Facebook message.
Yeah. Anyone who goes to our panel, Podcast CrossZone at Gamer X, make sure you have Spot Pass, Street Pass, whatever, set up for Theater Rhythm, because I'm going to have my 3DS with me, and I love that game, and I'm going to make sure I have my cartridge of it even, if anyone wants to do any of the weird multiplayer stuff.
Yes, I will dig out my cartridge too. All right, and last but certainly not least for our question of the week, Renee from Koopa Club. We got a double disc of Koopa Club.
Man, Koopa Club's awesome.
Said, the first rhythm game I played was DDR, and this was back when it was getting into the arcades. I can't remember what entry in the series it was, because to be honest, the game mechanic doesn't change, but a lot of different songs and remixes are rotated in, which is, Bimani and plastic instrument-wise, a kind of a hallmark of
that. Was it like third mix, do you think? Again, as if he can hear me. I will tweet him asking him that. Continue.
If I had to pick a favorite rhythm game, it's Beatmania. I first played the game when I was living and working overseas in China. Interesting, I didn't know that about Renee. And never heard of it before. A few friends of mine from college were DJs and spinning records, and syncing them together intrigued me, so the button layout and turntable caught my attention right away. I appreciated that I couldn't hear the entire song unless I hit the keys and spun the turntable at the correct time, so that made me want to play it more.
I need to dig out my Beatmania controller.
Yeah, I'm curious, Renee, if you've ever played DJ Hero and how you feel that compares.
Oh, yeah, that too, huh?
How you feel that compares. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about that on our B-side, but...
Well, get to the rest of his life.
And a close second is Dance Freaks, a.k.a. Dance Maniacs, which is a kind of a para-para dance style format that instead of buttons, you have to pass your hands, or if you want to be ambitious, your feet between two sensors up top and two down below in time the music. I love Dance Freaks.
Yeah, we're very fortunate here in the Bay Area that we have multiple different arcades that you can go to that have cabinets of that. It's
yeah,
a lot
like,
of fun.
And next, like, what I'm thinking of is Milpitas Golfland had I think it's Dance Maniacs here, right?
I think so.
Right next to a Para Paradise.
Yeah, yeah.
Before it became a cold place.
Night of Fire. What? I was doing a para-para routine to Night of Fire.
You were.
Totally normal.
All right,
thing
we have a little
do.
Bit of general feedback before we wrap up this episode. We had a question of the week response from episode 31. No, wait. It was our Ouya one. That was 32. Sorry. I made a mistake on my notes. But anyways, Dinkin' Donuts. DNKNDNTS. Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh my god, yum.
Oh my god, super yummy. On Tumblr. We blogged our question of the week, thank you. And he added, I'm sorry, I'm presuming that you're a he. I feel, like, really terrible. And Dunkin' Donuts added, I have one and it's one of the neatest devices I own. The hardware isn't great. The skinned OS isn't much better, but it truly drives home the couch party idea. Even the simplest of games can be fun. We've had it plenty with Hidden in Plain Sight, Towerfall, and Curves. There isn't a lot of software on it yet for a device that's been on the market less than a month. It's got plenty and more is being added every day. I will continue to enjoy the device for a long time.
That's super awesome. I really like you, Dunkin' Donuts, and I totally agree. You know, I came out of the closet as a huge Ouya fan last episode.
Mm-hmm.
I 100% agree with your entire comment.
And like, thank you so much for responding on our Tumblr, which is
yeah,
kind of
thank
our,
you. You're like,
our less followed social network. So
yeah,
I
that
apologize
Google
that,
Plus, like people aren't really here for that.
I apologize that I didn't get to that on time for the episode, but we will definitely keep a lookout on Tumblr for your responses and anyone else who responds. And speaking of Tumblr and Google Plus, over on Google Plus, Dan D, Game Buoy superfan, a husband to other Game Buoy superfan Crystal D.
Crystal D, continue.
Linked us to a Google Plus photo album that we will link to you on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuie.org
says, first attempt of a shirt for GameBuie in Animal Crossing. It is really rad.
Oh my god, yeah.
I kind of want to go start playing Animal Crossing and, like, rock out in my GameBuie shirt.
Now, see, don't you feel awful for talking about how you're over Animal Crossing? Like, no, it's time to get back into it right now.
Right. We got a tweet from Video Game Realness saying, hey, GameBuie.org, Koopa Club suggested we give your podcast a listen. Looking forward to it, and please check us out, too. And you know what? In fact, we did. And
yeah, I've listened to Video Game Realness. I'm going to be shouting them out in just a just a few minutes, so I don't want to say too much. But I'm a big fan. I really like what you guys are doing. Keep up the good work. Yeah. I think you're way, way, way better than GameBuie was, you know, just 4 or 5 episodes in.
They really got their shit together.
You do you, girl. Like, you are a plus in my book.
It made me think of, like, Canadian Koopa Club. And I mean that as a compliment to both of you.
Yeah, well, you know, as I somewhat infamously said last week, I think Koopa Club is a way better show than GameBuie, so...
Well, speaking of that, Fix Your Face, a.k.a. Jeremy from Koopa Club, tweeted, girl, I'm breaking Twitter silence just to say that you are not allowed to say that QK is better than GameBuie.
I just did. Deal with it.
And,
Strawberry Wish.
I was going to save hers for last, because it was a cute story. And I was hoping you didn't point out that I skipped and went out of order because I was trying
I did, so deal with it and do the best you can.
And kind of in, you started tweeting with Jeremy about that, and then Virtual Phil from Koopa Club said, I was thinking that GameBuie and Koopa Club are slowly but surely becoming sister shows. Hashtag podcast. And you said,
Sister, never knew how much I missed her. Yeah, no, I would be honored. You guys are awesome as hell. I'm super, super big fan of your guys' show.
Kind of like Sister Cities.
I've been shouting y'all out for forever.
Sister Cities official sister podcast.
So, yeah, I thank you. I actually take that as a compliment. Thank you, Phil. I really like what you guys do. I really like the episode that you personally edited or directed or whatever that Slagkick had guested on.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun.
That Taboo game that you put together was
that
awesome.
That was so fun.
I'm a big fan of what you do.
I feel like we need to play a game on GameBuie one day.
We probably will never do that. Strawberry Wish.
So my story about Strawberry Wish is that this is someone that I just randomly befriended a couple months back on Twitter when I started to watch Doctor Who, because the Doctor Who fandom is really, really freaking rad, and they'll just like follow people who tweet awesome things about Doctor Who. And so that's how I met Strawberry Wish. She's really rad. But this is a funny story, because she was listening to the show and then tweeted, wait, OMG, is GameBuie.org podcast, Slag Bike Point, and Slagkick? Someone just told me to listen to a part, and then my mind melted. So I think this is the first case of someone who was a Twitter friend to Captain Spike and myself who didn't know about the show, and then just someone else told them to take a listen, and she was like, wait, I know these people, because their Twitter handles sound familiar.
That is awesome, and as I often say, she is my spirit animal. Like,
She's so cool.
So you stole my spirit animal. Thank you so much for listening. We really love our fans. We really appreciate all the great feedback we get from y'all, and that's why we read pretty much all of it on the air every
and
week.
Thank you, unknown person, who...
Yeah.
Who told Strawberry Wish to check us out.
Yeah, thank you, too.
Like, I didn't even realize that Strawberry Wish followed games that much. I mostly talked to her about, like, music and Doctor Who. And...
Well, that's something you can tweet at her about.
Yeah. All right, anyway, thank you so much for your feedback, everyone, and we love your feedback.
We really do. We especially love your iTunes subscriptions and ratings/reviews. We really like your Facebook likes. We fucking love Twitter. We're pretty okay on Tumblr and Google+. And, of course, you can email us at mailbuie@gamebuie.org.
Mailbuie@gamebuie.org.
And, of course, you can check out our home base at gamebuie.org.
Gamebuie.org. And, you know, if you drop Mailbuie an email, he'll be sure to write back to you.
He will. It's actually very cute. We finally finalized that. I'm very happy with it.
Yep. Mailbuie@gamebuie.org.
Mailbuie@gamebuie.org.
So cute.
Very cute. Let's do our shout-outs, and then we can get the heck out of here and go catch up with Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio.
Where every gamer has a voice.
Hey, we've already done one of our shout-outs. I'd also like to shout out to Koopa Club. If you like what we do, then you really need to check these guys out. They're great. I really love what they do. This show, the last 5 minutes, has basically just been a Koopa Club love fest, so I'm not going to go into it any further.
And we'll continue along with Rob Roberts at Podcast Cross Zone.
Podcast Cross Zone.
Podcast Cross Zone. And last but not certainly least,
I also really want to shout out Video Game Realness, VG Realness. You can find them on Twitter, iTunes, World Wide Web.
Yeah.
Really great show. Their slogan, as I understand it, is serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. They are an LGBT show. Of course, I really feel like we do not have nearly enough LGBT representation in the games podcast space. So I am honestly, I'm just pleased as punch to see shows like this popping
definitely.
Up. Especially when, as I stated earlier, like right out the gate, these guys are like faster than a speeding bullet, have their whole shtick together.
Their sound quality is
really,
like,
really good show.
Their sound quality is really good too.
Yeah.
So you won't have that problem of going back and listening to early episodes and being like, oh, did Captain Spike and Sidekick record this in the bathroom?
Why are you making this about us? This is about them.
I was making it about us to make them look better than us.
You don't have to try to make people look better than us. It just happens.
Alright, well, can I do my shout-outs now?
You can, yes.
I'd like to shout-out to Game Bar, who I just had the pleasure of guesting on.
Oh yeah? Tell me about that.
And, you know, I used to say that they were the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary, but on the episode, they kind of gave me a new catchphrase to give them. So they're like the gay video game prairie home companion.
Oh my gosh, that's great. Like, I already listened to that show, and that makes me want to listen to it, like, twice somehow.
Horde House, I'm going to have to read the rude alteration you did to the slogan.
You should definitely not do that.
Captain Spike changed it. Rob, are you listening? To blah, 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 online video games, not serious, blah, blah, blah.
Why would you tell them that? You make me sound like a douche.
Of course, Horde House's actual slogan is the place for news about online gaming, but never too seriously.
I just want to point out that I have been good IRL friends with the people behind Horde House for many years. Again, I'm busting their chops. I think what they do is super good. They have been together way longer than Game Buoy. They put on a way more professional show than we do. I have nothing but respect for what they do, so please do not take that too personally. Please do not come at me with, like, pitchforks and burning torches, because that would be very unpleasant for me.
A nasty comment on the next Tord House. Please look forward to it.
Please look forward to it.
I'd like to also shout out to the Nerdgasm Network, the wildest shock video game radio show that you'll ever come across. Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. And Video Game Outsiders, a podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective. I managed to get through those shout-outs without getting tongue-tied.
Well done. I would still like to identify that our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated.
Who sailed off into the sunset, sadly.
We have bemoaned their outcast state several times in the last year. We will continue to do so, and I will always shout them out for that the music that we use of theirs for as long as we use it, because I think it's appropriate. Yep.
That is a group of people I would Kickstarter if they ever Kickstarter something.
Yeah, I hope one of them, I hope any of them listens to this and hears this and is like, hey, we should Kickstart something, because you got my money.
Yeah, because do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, it's basically become the Game Buoy theme song in my mind, and it's because of them.
Well, do you have anything else to say? And with that, those words of wisdom, ladies and gentlemen,
they were musical notes.
That was sort of a joke. Do catch up, please. Ladies and gentlemen of the Internet Radio, we appreciate your time. As always, thank you for your feedback. Keep gaming, keep thinking. We will see you later, and
Shunka Kokoro Kasanete.
What?
Thank you.
boobs, 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 lot of boobs.
Man, I make the baddest bitches send me nudes.